downstairs to make some peanut butter cookies for Travis, also chocolate chip. It's Friday, the weekend looming ahead. Tonight we're going out to dinner, to an Italian place on Newberry Street that has no business charging what it does. We'll valet park, we'll get appetizers before our entrees and dessert after them. To drink, the waiter will say, and I will consult the wine list, pick by price. I don't want an appetizer, Travis says. He is trying to keep his voice low, but he's agitated. We are seated at the restaurant after having been shown to our table with a certain restrained condescension. It is early, 5:30. No other customers have the poor taste to be here. Most of the waiters sit in a small white-coated group at a table in the back of the room, lazily gossiping, laughing, drinking what looks like ice water with lemon slices in it. I just want spaghetti with butter and cheese. Yes, well, you can have that, I tell him. But wouldn't you like to start with something else? Start what? Start your dinner, honey. Spaghetti is my dinner. Yes, but you can have an appetizer as well. You can have both. Come on, you know that. Fine. He snaps his menu closed, slumps back in his chair. He yanks at his tie, loosening it. So, I say, what will it be? You can have anything you want. I don't care. You're the one who wants it. You pick. I straighten in my chair, smile at the approaching waiter. He is so elegantly gay, I feel ashamed of myself, of my predictable domestic status. Breeder, divorced. Knowledge of nightlife and art scene, nil. The waiter stands before me, raises an eyebrow. Have we decided? Antipasto, I'm thinking, a little panicked. Shrimp and lime vinaigrette. And then, because Travis is right, this is all only exhausting, I say, spaghetti with butter and grated cheese for my son, please, and for me too. Don't be stingy with that Parmesan either. Two Cokes, no ice, four cannoli, and the check. All right, the waiter says, and accompanies the snappy motion of his pen sliding back into his breast pocket with a tight smile. All right, Travis yells and sits up straighter. Travis, he looks up at me, fearful, I know, of being told he's talking too loud. Why don't you take off that tie? I slip my heels off, lean back in my chair. Travis removes his tie, coils it into a neat arrangement at the side of his plate. Beside it, I lay my belt. Hours later, after Travis and I watch Star Wars twice, he falls into bed. I wash up and go into my bedroom, intent on reading one of the new books I bought the other day. I turn back the bedclothes, and then, just like that, all the good feeling I've built up today seems to drain out of the soles of my feet. I stand there for a while, and then I get down on my knees and whisper, "Help me," into my folded hands. Chapter 5. On Monday morning, right after Travis leaves for school, the phone rings. When I answer it, I hear an extremely irritated voice say, "What the hell are you doing, Sam?" "Oh, hello, David. What are you doing?" "I'm standing here, David. I'm standing here talking on the phone. What are you doing? Where are you?" "At work." "Not in his car in the driveway, then, calling to see if I'll take him back." "I just had a conversation with John Hurley at the bank. Very interesting. It appears that a large check was written to Tiffany's last week by you."
"That's right. I needed some dishes."
"Uh-huh. Well, I suppose this is one way for you to get back at me. Rather unimaginative, I must say."
"I suppose you must. Not nearly as original as packing a bag and moving to a hotel."
"Sam, I'm calling to tell you I've transferred most of the money into another account. I'm sorry, but you really leave me no choice."
"He... oh, God."
"Well, fine, then. Fine. What should I have for breakfast?" "I'll provide adequately for Travis and for you as well, but not so adequately that you can buy $12,000 worth of merchandise at Tiffany's on a random Thursday afternoon."
"Shredded wheat with strawberries? Eggs?
Sam?"
"Yes."
"Are you listening to me? Do you understand?"
I hang up.
Then lift the receiver and hang up again harder. Then take the phone off the cradle, lay it on the kitchen table.
"I'll get a job. I'll make my own damn money. I'll rent out David's study and maybe the basement, too. That will do nicely to help pay the mortgage. I'll keep the house, not sell it, as David said we must. I live here, Travis lives here, and I will stay here. I will, in fact, do whatever I want to do. Use the chainsaw in the tool shed, which David said was too dangerous. Wear purple eyeshadow, which David said was too tacky. As for now, I'll go out and take a long walk. I start for the door, then look at the phone lying on the table. We tried to reach you, Mrs. Morrow, but your line was busy. The principal signed the release form for the surgery. I put the phone back in the cradle, take a step, and hear it ring. I pick it up. I heard you!
Heard what? My mother asks.
Oh, Ma, I thought you were David. He just called.
And?
He needed to talk about finances. Nothing, really.
Well, speaking of finances, I found a coupon for 40% off a permanent. Are you interested?
I don't want a perm.
I think it might look very nice.
You use it, Ma.
I have a perm.
Well, I'll bet one of your friends can use it.
That's a thought. You remember Angie Ryan? I'll give it to her. She needs a lift. Her husband should be institutionalized. Do you know what he did to that poor woman last week?
Oh, well, I pull out a kitchen chair, sit down. Travis is upstairs doing homework, and I am sitting at the kitchen table making a list. 1. Call David to come and get all his shit, I write. Then, fearing Travis will see it, I erase shit and substitute things. In parentheses, I add, so he will have what he needs. Next, I write, 2.
Post sign in Franco's supermarket for roommates.
Then, 3. Job. A job doing what? I imagine filling out the application. Last job? Girl singer in rock band. References? Roach, Davis lead guitarist. I wonder whatever happened to him. He might have made a career out of being a studio musician. He was really good. He could roll joints with one hand, and he taught me how, too. Now there's something useful I might put on my application. Ugh, what can I do? What do I want to do? I rest my head on my arms, close my eyes, recall something that happened many years ago. When I was a first grader, I once went to the bank with my mother. Outside, sitting against the wall on a red, worn blanket, was a man with legs that ended somewhere around his knees. His tan khaki pants were folded neatly beneath his stumps, and the matter-of-factness of this horrified me. The man held a cigar box out, rattled the change inside it, and smiled up at us, squinting against the bright sun. Then he tipped his straw hat and asked, "Can you help me out, ladies? Spare a little change?" I burst into tears so loud and heartfelt my mother immediately pulled me away, brought me back to the car, and rolled up the windows. "Shh, it's all right," she said, dabbing at my face with a hanky and looking nervously about. And I said, "No, it wasn't all right. The man didn't have any legs. He couldn't even stand up." My mother said, "Well, yes, that was right, but the man was here all the time, and he was happy. Really, he likes sitting outside the bank and collecting money." This made me cry all the harder until, exasperated, my mother finally pressed a dollar bill in my hand and told me to give it to the man, but to be sure not to touch him. I wiped my reddened face on the hem of my dress, then walked slowly over to give the man the money. "Thank you, little lady," he said. And I told him he was welcome. And then I did touch him. I reached out and touched his arm, and he put his hand over my hand, and that was when I stopped hurting. I sit up. Maybe I can get a job in the nursing home a few blocks away. Every time I pass it, I look in the window to watch bits of activity. A woman dressed in a pastel sweatsuit being pushed in a wheelchair down the hall. A circle of people in what looks to be a community room singing. I've always had the urge to go in there and offer something. Maybe I will now. I don't really have any job experience, I imagine saying, but I really like old people. The salary doesn't have to be much if I can find roommates. The important thing is that I do something that's meaningful to me. That's the truth for me. I'm going to start telling the truth. A woman I know once made a New Year's resolution to tell the truth, and I remember thinking how extraordinary and how difficult that would be. You make such a resolution, and no matter what someone asks you, you have to answer honestly. Think of it. I'm working in a nursing home, I say aloud, trying it out. The phone rings and I answer it distractedly. A man clears his throat, then says, Yes, I'm looking for Sam Reynolds. Reynolds? My maiden name. It must be a high school reunion, I think, and answer with some excitement that, yes, this is Sam. I always loved Greg Mulvaney, the pitcher on our baseball team. Dark Italian dimples. I never told him. Maybe he's divorced now, too. A slow dance, a tentative confession, perhaps on both of our parts. Who knows what could happen? I push the bowl of potato chips I've been eating away from me. But then the man says, I'm Stuart Gardner. Your mother gave me your number. Oh. She told me you might be willing to meet me, say, for a drink tonight. She thought we'd have a lot in common. Did she? Yes, she did, for one thing. What was your name? Stuart. Stuart Gardner, like the museum? Uh-huh. Well, you know, I really think it's a little soon, Stuart. My husband. Did my mother tell you? Yes, I'm very sorry. She said he died over a year ago, though, and she thought you might be ready for it. Just a drink is all I'm talking about, or coffee, whatever. I'm sorry, Stuart, I really don't think so. He sighs, a petulant sound that makes me sure I wouldn't like him anyway, then asks, Well, would you at least be willing to take my number? Oh, sure. You have a pencil? I do, of course, but I do not pick it up. Yes, I have one. It's 649. I repeat the numbers back slowly, then say, Okay. I really think we'd get along, Stuart says. Your mother's told me a lot about you. Maybe after a while, I'll call you when I'm ready. But I'm still having flashbacks, you know. I still see his face when I, you know, shot him. You, just kidding. Silence. I hang up, realize I have broken my vow to tell the truth already. But I will get back on track right now. I pick up the phone, punch in my mother's number. When Veronica answers with her usual happy and expectant, Yes, hello? I yell, What is the matter with you? Sam, is that you? Don't get me a date with anyone ever. Oh, did Stuart call you? He's the nicest man. You just love him. Wait a minute. I just said, don't do this. And you're acting like I'm thrilled, like I just made plans for a rendezvous in Paris. Veronica chuckles. Well, not a rendezvous, not even a date, just a drink, sweetheart. That way you'll find out a little about each other. Then you date. Dinner, maybe a movie, although you can't really talk in a movie. I never did understand going to a movie on a first date. But dinner in a nice, oh, say, French restaurant. Flowers on the table, not too expensive, but something that... I lean against the wall, instantly exhausted, but I manage to say, Ma, listen to me. If anyone else calls me, I will hang up on them. I swear I will. I will just hang up. Silence. Do you hear me? Sam, you sound awfully blue. I'm worried about you. I will hang up. Well, fine then. You just mope all you want to, little Miss Blue. Some people revel in their misery. Some people just love to be unhappy. I need to find my own way, Mother. Well, good for you. You want to weep and gnash your teeth and carry on, go right ahead. Have a good time. That's really great for Travis, too. I am not gnashing my teeth. I'm getting a job. And roommates. Roommates? Yes. You're going to open your house to strangers? Oh, Lord. I hang up, refill the potato chip bowl, and do not answer the phone when it rings again. I sit down with my list, add, let machine take all calls. Chapter 6. I'm at Franco's, the small neighborhood grocery store walking distance from my house. It's more expensive, but less overwhelming than the supermarket, and there are small touches that offer comfort everywhere. Free coffee, a recipe exchange board, the soft sounds of classical music in the background, with no overly excited voice breaking in to describe unbelievable savings on London broil. The smell of turkey roasting in the back room. The aisles are named for nearby streets, and their signs are hand-painted in curly black script.
Polite high school-aged boys with neatly combed hair and clear complexions bag the groceries and, unless refused, bring them out to the car, no tipping allowed. This, of course, only makes customers more anxious to tip. But the boys steadfastly turn the money down, and on their way back into the store, they collect any stray carts and arrange them in a neat line outside the door. I can't imagine where they find these young men. When they go home at night, it must be to the 1950s. The older people who work in the store are department managers. They are vigilant, restacking pyramids of tomatoes, straightening cartons of cottage cheese, stirring up the pasta salad at the deli counter. I like to be checked out by Marie, the cashier who's worked at Franco's for 31 years, and I wait in line for her now, ignoring the other cashier whose register is free. I want to ask Marie where on the community bulletin board I should pin my sign. Some spots might be better than others. I've seen ads for places for rent before, stuck between ads for free cats, babysitting, piano lessons, carpenters willing to do small jobs. I've carefully printed my message on an index card. Roommate wanted. Large bedroom for rent in very nice house with single woman and 11-year-old son. No smoking, pets or kids okay, must be employed and responsible, $500 a month. It occurred to me, writing it, that it didn't say enough. But I didn't know how to add more. Please don't be one of those types who never wears deodorant. I couldn't say that. Please become my friend. I need a friend. I couldn't say that either. No hospitalizations for psychosis, Rita had suggested. Neurotics, okay. Well, I'll see who calls, that's all. Then interview them. Take it from there. I trust my intuition. I know about people, except for David. Please don't be like David. Hey, wake up, Marie says, reaching over to pull my cart forward. I smile, begin unloading my few groceries. What's for dinner? Marie asks, looking over her half glasses to see what I've selected. Then, what's wrong? Oh, it's just, I need to post a sign, Marie. Where's a good spot on the board? What are you selling? I'm renting a room in my house. Really? Yes, I need a roommate. The word is ridiculous. I am 42 years old. Marie hands me my change, tells the other checkout clerk that she'll be right back. Come with me, she says, and leads me into the back room. Cases of soda are piled high. Time cards are lined up on a rack on the wall. Get a job. What's going on, hon? She asks. I shrug, sit down on a box full of seltzer bottles. You and your husband split up or something? I nod. Well, I'll be damned, Marie sighs, leans back against the time clock, crosses her arms over her blue cotton smock. Franco's is gaily embroidered over one breast. Over the other, she wears her name tag, pinned, as usual, at an odd angle. She doesn't need a name tag, anyway. Everybody knows her. She is everyone's surrogate something. She is in her late 50s, overweight in the deeply comforting way. She has compassionate blue eyes, salt-and-pepper hair, beautiful skin that she has told me she owes to mayonnaise masks. I've been exchanging mindless pleasantries with her for years. Comments on the weather, criticism of the Red Sox, a shared interest in Travis's growth. Marie was the first person outside the immediate family to hold Travis. I brought him to the store when he was 3 weeks old. When did this all happen? Marie asks. A couple of weeks ago. I'm keeping the house, but I'll need some help with the mortgage payment, so I thought I'd advertise for a roommate. Oh, boy, I don't know. Is there any place on the board that people look at more than other places? She frowns. Are you sure about this? You could get a real nut. Well, I don't know what else to do. I can't afford it by myself. Wait a minute, Marie says. I've got a prospect for you. My mother needs a place. Your mother? Her rent's going up again. She can't afford her own apartment anymore, but she doesn't want to live with me, wants to keep her independence. She's an awfully nice woman, Sam, real quiet, tidy, loves children. And you know all those great recipes I gave you? They're hers. A grandmother. Probably a real one, too. Not one like my mother is to Travis. Someone who wears pearl studs and pastel dresses that reach mid-calf, rather than gold stretch pants with tight sweaters and multiple necklaces. It could work, why not? And if I can rent out the basement, too, I wouldn't have to worry so much about the salary at any job I take.
I tear a piece of paper from my grocery bag. Here's my number. Have her call me. I'd love to meet her.
There is one thing.
Yes?
Incontinence?
She has a boyfriend.
They're close.
Oh, well, one of us might as well have one.
I shoulder my purse, stand.
Thanks, Marie.
She nods, sad for me.
Although I realize I'm not sad for myself, not at the moment. The relief makes me feel light. Maybe I really am lighter.
Grief has a catabolic effect that must make you lose weight. In the car, I check my face in the rearview mirror. It looks exactly the same. And then, just like that, I am sad again.
I start the car, turn on the radio, hear "What Becomes of a Broken Heart."
Good question.
This is such a crazy time, I tell Rita. One minute I feel awful, and then I feel kind of ecstatic.
Yeah, that's what everybody says.
She's making dinner. I hear water running, the muted clanging of pots and pans.
That you just ride this emotional roller coaster.
Exactly. The other night I was lying in the bathtub crying. Today I feel like the day I got married is the day the lights went out, that I'm lucky to be rid of him.
You are.
What are you making?
Chicken, Rita says.
What else does anyone eat anymore? Imagine how the hens feel bringing their children into the world.
Listen, I think I found a roommate.
A beat, and then Rita says,
you can't have already? You have to take some time, Sam. You have to be careful.
It's a 78-year-old woman, for God's sake. I know her daughter.
What does Travis think about that?
Well, I haven't told him. He knows we're going to be getting a roommate, but he doesn't know who or when. I want to make sure she's really moving in before I tell him about her.
Rita sighs. You want to live with an old lady. Now there's a major improvement.
Maybe you can go play bingo together, wear each other's shawls.
Ugh, that's it. I'm coming out there. You need me.
I don't think it's such a bad idea. She likes to cook, for one thing. And I want to rent out the basement, too. I'll get someone more my age for down there, or someone much younger, maybe a 20-year-old, a biker. How's that?
I hear the doorbell and say, she's here, the woman. She's here to meet me.
At night? She goes out at night?
I gotta go.
Be careful.
Of an old woman? Remember Betty Davis, Baby Jane?
I'll call you later. I hang up, push my hair back from my face, and go to the door. But it is not the woman at the door. It is David, ringing the bell to be sure I understand that he no longer lives here, I suppose.
He wanted to come home, David says.
He looks over his shoulder at Travis, moving slowly up the sidewalk.
You were supposed to keep him till bedtime.
He wanted to come home, Sam. What do you want me to do?
Why does he have to be gone anyway? What are you doing?
Travis comes in, drops his book bag on the hall floor, heads for the kitchen.
What's to eat?
What happened? I ask David.
He shrugs. He's tired, I think.
Has he been sleeping? Have you been putting him to bed on time?
What's to eat? Travis yells.
You were supposed to eat with Dad, I yell back. I didn't make anything. I don't have anything. Travis comes back into the hallway.
You don't have anything?
I look at David, see the same question in his eyes. Outside, I see an older model gray Oldsmobile pull under the streetlight. A man gets out, dressed in a dark suit and hat, and goes around to open the door for an older woman. She takes a long look at the house, reaching behind herself to straighten the back of her dress.
You and Travis have to leave, I tell David quietly, right now.
He turns to watch the couple coming up the walk.
Who's that?
I'm interviewing a roommate.
Are you kidding? He looks again.
I'm not sure suddenly of anything, but with an authority that surprises me, I say, take Travis out for dinner right now. He was supposed to eat with you.
I told you he doesn't want to go. Take him anyway.
From behind me, I hear Travis say,
that's our roommate? Old people?
I take him gently by the arm. It's the woman I'll be talking to. You go and get some dinner with Dad. I'll talk to you when you get home. I'll tell you all about it. Don't worry about a thing. I push him out the door with David, then straighten to wave to the couple. The woman is carrying a black patent leather pocketbook by the handle, using both hands. She is smiling.
Her boyfriend cradles her elbow, guides her tenderly along. He has a white mustache, neatly trimmed, and he is wearing a bow tie. This woman can move in tonight. They both can. The phone rings just after I've gone to sleep. I squint to see the numbers on the clock. 11:30. You told her she could move in, didn't you? Rita asks when I pick up the receiver. Oh, hi, I was sleeping. You did, didn't you? Yes, I did.
Great.
It is great. You'd like her. I'm sure I would. I'm also sure I wouldn't want to live with her.
Why not? What is this prejudice you have against older people? I never knew this about you.
I get out of bed, quietly close the bedroom door.
I'm not prejudiced. I just think you should think a little more about who you want to live with. I mean, didn't the last experience teach you anything?
She'll be fine. She has a wonderful boyfriend, this old, refined-looking gentleman who just... he is so vigilant, so attentive. We had tea together. We had a nice time. She's moving in next week. Tomorrow I'm getting all David's stuff moved out.
To where?
Oh, he found a condo already. I think he'd been looking for a while.
Jesus.
It's okay. No, it isn't.
Listen, Rita, I'm going back to sleep. We can fight tomorrow.
I hang up, then go to Travis's room. He's asleep. The phone didn't wake him. That's good. He had a rough night. He didn't understand why he had to leave with David when he wanted to stay home. He didn't understand why we really are getting a roommate despite my careful explanations. I stand beside him, my arms wrapped around myself, then reach down to pull the covers up to his shoulders. He stirs slightly, resettles himself. I kiss the top of his head, then go to sit in the chair in the corner of his room. I can smell him in the air. It is such a fine smell, faintly like earth, but saltier. I pick up one of his stuffed animals, an ancient bear, and hold it on my lap. Its size is close to the size Travis was when I first began reading out loud to him. I can rest my chin on the top of the bear's head, just as I used to do with Travis. I don't hold Travis anymore, of course, not to read to him or for any other reason either. I wish I'd known that the last time was going to be the last time. But of course that information would have been as painful as this moment. When Travis had gotten his first haircut, after all, the barber had handed me his handkerchief with a smile, then a box of tissues with no smile. I lean my head back, close my eyes. I am so deeply tired. And I am afraid. The truth is, I have no idea what I'm doing. It's not fair that my son has a mother like this. His mother should know what she's doing. Chapter 7. Late Wednesday afternoon, a small moving truck pulls up to the curb. ProMove. Sounds like someone David might hire. Two men look as though they might be father and son get out of the truck, talk to each other before they start for the door. I wonder what they're saying. Remember, this is a divorce situation here. We'll have to be careful. Don't say anything to the missus. She might start bawling. I open the door, stand waiting on the porch. Hi, I say. Oh, God. Mrs. Morrow, the older man says.
Yes.
We're here to pick up a few of Mr. Morrow's things.
Yes.
I step out of the way to let them in. The study is the last room on the right upstairs. The master is to the left. You'll find all his clothes at one end of the closet. This won't take too long, the man says, and something in the kind tone of his voice reaches my knees. I go into the kitchen where I will find something to do. I can't watch them. We'd gotten ham and cheese subs for lunch. While we sat on the empty living room floor and watched the moving men carry his desk upstairs, David put his Coke bottle up to mine for a toast. I love this house, he said. We're never moving. I organize pots and pans, wipe out cupboards, line up spice bottles. When I hear the man call out, "All set," I come into the living room. "All set," he says again, quietly. Beside him, his son frankly stares at me, three fingers on his hip, football player style. "So if you could just sign here." "Oh, sure." I take the man's ballpoint pen, it's greasy, and start to sign my name, and then I drop the pen onto the clipboard and put my hands to my face.
Oh, boy, the man says, and then, I'm awful sorry, miss. I stop crying, pick up the pen, sign my name, say thank you, watch them drive away, go upstairs and regard the empty room. David, we can't do it in here. Shh, take off your clothes. We'll be so quiet we won't hear us. I sit in the middle of the floor and rock like an autistic. There is comfort in it. In the corner, I see a paper clip, and I pick it up and hold it. Then I put it in my pocket, and then I go to the bedroom, look in the closet. Yep, they got it all. I sit on the edge of the bed, stare at the wall, then I take the paper clip out of my pocket and put it in the top drawer of the nightstand. Now I'll call Karen Wheeler to tell her it's safe for Travis to come home, and that he can bring Ben, too, if he wants. And I know what Karen will say. She'll say, oh, well, why doesn't Travis just stay here for a while? Because she won't want Ben here, because what if it's contagious? Ben answers the phone when I call. Hey, Ben, I say, it's Travis's mom. I just wanted to tell you that Travis can come home anytime, and you can come too if you want. Stay for dinner? Oh, okay, hold on a second. He puts the phone down, and I hear him say, hey, T, want to go over to your house? Your mom says it's okay. Silence. And then Ben comes back to the phone. He says we'll just stay here, okay? Sure. Can I speak to him, though? Another moment, and then Ben comes back to the phone again. Mrs. Morrow? Yes. He's doing something now. He says he'll see you later. Oh, all right. Thank you, Ben. It's just we're playing this computer game. He's at the hard part. He's a sweet kid, Ben. He forgives me. When Travis comes home, he asks if the study is completely empty. Yes, I say. Would you like to see it? Why would I want to see an empty room? But after we've gone to bed, I hear his door open, and I know exactly where he's going. And I know he needs to be alone going there. My body lies in bed while my mind stands beside him, apologizing, apologizing, apologizing. Chapter 8. Marie is the first to arrive, ready to help her mother move in. It is Saturday morning, a crisp and clear late October day, the sky a rare dark blue. When I went out for the paper, I stood shivering in the driveway for a while, looking up appreciatively until I felt dizzy. Then I came back inside to make banana bread. It's almost a reflex. Every time I feel happy, I need to make something to eat. Also, every time I feel sad. So there is the rich smell of banana bread in the air now, as well as freshly brewed coffee, and Marie sniffs deeply as she takes off her coat. Smells good, she tells me. Then looking around, say, this is a nice house. Maybe I'll move in too. You know, leave the old man. He probably wouldn't notice anyway. Really? I almost ask. I show Marie the rest of the house, including the study where her mother will be living. Perfect, Marie says. And then, looking at me, you okay? Yeah. Really? Well, yes. Yes. Thank you. And then the Ryder truck arrives. A man driving it who's been hired to help carry stuff in. There wasn't much, Lydia had assured me. Some bedroom furniture, a few kitchen things, linens. The apartment she lived in before had been mostly furnished. I stand at the window and watch the man climb out of the truck, note with satisfaction that he is huge. I won't need to help much. He opens the back doors of the truck and pulls out a brass headboard, which glints magnificently in the sun. Boy, that bed is old, Marie says, sipping coffee and standing beside me. My mother was born in it, and her mother. I see a woman in the bed with wavy dark hair loosened about her head, perspiring, another woman wearing a long skirt and a white blouse with rolled-up sleeves, standing by to wipe her face with a soft folded cloth, to speak quietly into her ear, a woman who has had children herself and thus communicates in a higher language. When I was in labor, David sat beside me, eating the dinner the hospital provided and complaining that it was cold. I turned the call light on for the nurse, who upon entering asked, "Need something for pain, hon?" "No, thank you," I said, and then pointing to David's tray, "It's cold." "Oh," she said. "Okay, I'll take care of it right away." She took David's tray from him, said in a low voice to me, "First things first, right?" Oh, no, you don't know him, I'd wanted to say. But maybe she did. I see the moving man coming up the walk, and I go to the door to meet him. He is probably well over 6'3", and his weight is considerable. He is fat, is the plain truth. And yet I find him extremely pleasant to look at. It has to do with his beautiful black hair, cut in an appealingly shaggy way, and his brown eyes. They're nice, too, golden, almost. He is wearing faded blue jeans, a white shirt with the sleeves rolled up, black suspenders, and red high-top sneakers, no coat. He smells faintly of soap. Aren't you cold? I ask. Nope. He smiles at me. Nice teeth. I smile back, lean against the door jamb, arms crossed. Did you want me to tell him where to put it, Sam? Marie asks. Oh, I'm sorry, I say. It's up. Well, here, let me show you. I lead him up the staircase, conscious of my backside, as I always am, leading one damn workman or another upstairs or downstairs. It doesn't matter who they are, meter man, furnace repair man, furniture delivery man. Every time I walk in front of them, I can feel them judging my ass, even if they're not, but probably they are. I take him to the study. This is it. I move to the window and open the shade. The room fills with light, and inexplicably this fills me with a kind of optimism and pride. The man leans the bed frame gently against the wall, then extends his hand. My name is King. I laugh. It is? Honest to God, my parents were different. Well, I say, I'm sorry for laughing. It's just, you know, Graceland. I'm Sam. So you'll be Lydia's roommate?
Yes, you know her, Lydia?
Just met her. Her and her boyfriend, nice people. They have a lot of class, something you don't see much of anymore. He motions for me to go ahead of him out of the room. She doesn't have much stuff. This won't take long. I made some banana bread, and there's coffee, I say. I agree with what he just said about Lydia, therefore I will feed him. Downstairs, I see that Lydia has arrived. She is taking her coat off, adjusting her open-weave cardigan sweater, asking her daughter where the closet is again, and Marie is saying she's not sure either. I'll hang that up, I say, taking her coat, and then shyly, hello, welcome. Lydia smiles, takes my hand between her own. Her hands are warm, strong, not dry and fragile feeling, as I had thought they would be. My hands, however, reflect my nervousness. I know they're ice cold. I lead the women into the kitchen, set out cups and plates for them, slice the banana bread. After we sit down, Lydia pushes a small package toward me. For you, she says. And then when I start to protest, she says, it's nothing, very small. I unwrap crystal salt and pepper shakers, start to say thank you when I am interrupted by a high-pitched, yoo-hoo! At first, I'm confused, thinking the moving man has an awfully high voice, but then there is my mother, coming into the kitchen. She is wearing a lavender workout suit, and her coat is open, car keys in her hand. Ma, well, you never answer the phone. I was on my way back from my aerobics class. She looks pointedly at Marie and Lydia. Lydia, please meet my mother, Veronica Reynolds. Mom, this is Lydia Fitch, my new roommate, and this is her daughter, Marie Howard. It's moving day. I guess you saw the truck. Veronica comes to the table to shake both women's hands. Her bracelets jangle busily. Very nice to meet you. What a surprise. She doesn't say surprise like it's a surprise. She says it like it's a dirty trick. Banana bread? Lydia asks, offering her own untouched plate, and Veronica hastily declines. I'm on my way home, really. Just dropped in to see how my daughter's doing. But apparently she's doing just fine, isn't she? Got two roommates already. Just one, Marie says. Pardon? Just one. I'm not moving in. I'm just here to help my mother get settled. I see. Where's Travis? Shopping, I say. He went to the mall with Billy Silverman and his mother to find some pants he must have, all the rage. You let him buy his own clothes now? I have for some time. Uh-huh. Well, something else I didn't know. She looks at Lydia. Funny, isn't it, how you cannot know so much about those you're closest to? Okay, I'd better be going. I don't want to stay too long, not even invited in the first place, of course.
Ma, you're welcome to stay as long as you like. I'm sure you know that.
Oh, no, really, I can't. Lot to do for tonight. I'm having a man over for dinner. I thought, well, why not lobster? Something sort of elegant. And I just found something out about lobster, too. A woman at the gym told me if you slice open their claws after they're cooked and hold them upside down over the sink, the water will run right out. Then there's no need for bibs covering up your cleavage.
A polite silence at the table. Then Veronica tells Lydia,
Well, I hope you'll be very happy here, she turns to me. Want to walk me to the car?
At the door, we meet King, carrying an armload of clothes and a pole lamp. He nods, smiling, and my mother pulls back to let him pass.
Well, she says, after we get outside, don't get him mad at you. A few pounds getting a free ride there. He's quite nice, really.
She climbs into her car, pulls down the visor to check herself in the mirror.
I wonder something, she says.
What? She adjusts her bangs, leans in closer to the mirror, wipes away a smudge of eyeliner.
I just wonder if you could give me one reason why I couldn't have lived here with you instead of a total stranger who's old.
Let's see, I think, one reason. She looks at me.
I mean your own mother. I just wonder what you could have been thinking that you wouldn't ask me first. Oh, Ma, this all came about accidentally, all of a sudden. I didn't plan it. Besides, I don't know if it's such a good idea for mothers and daughters to live together after a certain age. Do you really? I mean, if you need money.
I certainly don't need your money. Have I ever asked you for money? Ever? Even once?
Well, then I'm sorry if you feel... Veronica puts her hand on my arm, squeezes it.
Oh, it's all right. I understand. You're confused right now, honey. Doing things on the spur of the moment that you probably don't understand yourself. You didn't think to ask me. You probably thought I wouldn't want to live with you and Travis. Oh, now, darling, of course I would. But not quite yet. Maybe a few years from now, all right?
I straighten, stand silently. What is it that I feel so often around my mother? Amazement? Confusion? Is it anger?
You know, if I did live here, I've always thought a little chintz in that family room is all you need. That's what I'd do, recover the sofa.
Right. My mother turns the key in the ignition. Engelbert Humperdinck blasts out a plea for forgiveness, not having known it would end this way. Veronica respectfully turns him down.
Call me later. There's someone I want you to meet. This one you'll really like.
Ma, she flutters her fingers.
I'll talk to you soon.
Then she turns the radio back up and pulls away, her right blinker gaily flashing as it usually is. I head back for the house, irritated at the fact that my mother is right. I am confused. I am dreaming that someone is shaking my shoulder, and then suddenly I realize that someone is shaking my shoulder.
What?
I say, loudly irritated, my eyes closed. Then sitting up quickly, what is it, Travis, what's wrong? He puts his fingers to his lips, gestures for me to follow. I look at the clock, 3:07.
What are you doing? I change my voice to a whisper, remembering suddenly that someone else is in the house. It's the middle of the night, are you sick?
I reach out to feel his forehead. He pulls away impatiently.
Come with me, he says urgently,
and I follow him down the hall. Outside Lydia's shut door, he stops, waits, and then I hear it. Snoring. Loud snoring. Cartoon variety. I look at Travis, cover my mouth as I start to laugh, but he is not amused.
Mom, he whispers fiercely, it isn't funny.
He shakes his head, then goes back into his bedroom, slams the door. I go in after him, sit on his bed.
Travis,
he pulls the pillow over his head. I try to take it off, and he pulls it more tightly over him.
You can't breathe when you do that, you know.
Who cares? His voice is muffled, shaky with tears.
Come out from under there. I want to talk to you.
I don't want to talk. You're just crazy. He turns away from me.
I yank the pillow off, turn him over.
Now, you listen here. You listen to me. Don't you dare talk to me like that. I am your mother, and I am not crazy. I am. Things are changing, that's all, Travis. They are changing because they have to. And don't you slam doors at 3 in the morning either. Some people are trying to sleep.
He watches me through narrowed eyes, says nothing. Finally, I say,
well, what, Travis? What's the big deal? So she snores.
She woke me up. I have to go to school tomorrow. I have to get a good night's sleep.
I refrain from commenting on this new interest in academic responsibilities. Say instead,
tomorrow's Sunday, Travis.
Well, fine, but she probably snores every night.
I suppose she might, but you'll get used to it. You really will. You'd be surprised what you can get used to. After a few nights, you won't even notice it.
Who wants to get used to it? Who wants an old lady living here anyway? She's not even my grandma.
No, she's not.
So why is she here?
I told you. Dad left. If we want to keep living here, we need a roommate to help pay for the mortgage. Remember, I told you that.
Nothing. Travis?
Yes, I remember. His voice is quiet now, resigned. I hate that he knows what a mortgage is.
What if she dies here or something? He asks.
Pardon?
What if she dies here?
Well, Travis, I'm sure that's not going to happen.
My God, what if it does?
I see myself on the phone, abstractly weeping, saying,
I don't know her medical history. She just moved in, but I think she's dead.
Chapter 9. A little over a week later, on Monday morning, I sit alone at the kitchen table. Lydia got up early, had tea and toast with blackberry jam, and then went out with Thomas. She was going to accompany him to a doctor's appointment, and then they were going to an afternoon concert at Symphony Hall. Travis ate his Cheerios sullenly, then left for school without saying goodbye. Now I sit with a fourth cup of coffee, feeling my heartbeat too fast and not caring. Maybe this is a good way to kill yourself, an exuberant overdose of caffeine. I'm dying, I'm dying, I'm dying, could be my last thought. Had to go, too painful. Oh, what I want to do is hand my life over to someone else. That's all. And they could rearrange everything into something that would make sense. There, they could say, now. Was that so hard? Well, for me, yes. It is too hard for me. I am no good at my own life. I close my eyes, lean my head back, and begin to sob from a place deep in my stomach. I can't be alone. I don't want to be alone. I miss David so much. Yes, I do. I miss the presence of another person in my bed at night, even if he doesn't touch me. The reliability of someone else being there in the morning, even if they only shave and stare straight ahead into the mirror while you lean against the bathroom door jamb with your cup of coffee, chatting hopefully. And I miss my son. I miss the way that he was before, when he trusted me, when he thought I could take care of him. And then suddenly I stop crying, push wet strands of hair back from my face. What is the point in this? First, I will go on a diet. This grief has put 5 pounds on me so far. I have to be careful. There are some women for whom sorrow attracts fat, and I am one of them. I will go on a diet, and then I will take some adult education courses. Oh, but then I'll have to find some. And I'll have to go and register somewhere, fill in tiresome blank after blank, put an X in the Ms. box. I've always put an X in the Ms. box, but now it's pathetic. And I'll have to get dressed. I'm not dressed now. I don't get dressed right away anymore. Martha Stewart doesn't know what she's talking about. I stare wearily at the kitchen table, at the swatch of sunlight that lies over the basket of paper napkins. The pattern on the napkins is illuminated, white on white roses. I never saw those roses before. I have lived my life blind. I need to talk to someone. I go to the phone to call Rita, then stop. It's too early. Who then? Louise and I have never been close. I haven't made any other real friends. There is no one. I have spent most of my life focusing on David, and he is gone.
Nothing has rushed in to fill this void. There are no natural laws to make for an instant adjustment. Humans are stupider than nature. I just have to go through this, that's all, by myself. It is all up to me. Things are too much up to me, and I don't like it. It is not exhilarating. It is not an opportunity to grow. It is hard work, scary, lonely stuff, and I don't want it. I don't want it. I want my old life back. I go to the phone quickly, dial David's office number. When his secretary puts me through, I realize I have no idea what to say. Sam? How are you? I was just going to call you, Sam. I've made a terrible mistake. I'm fine. His voice is wary. Wary? But we were married. We were married for nearly 20 years. I lean against the wall. David, I squeeze the phone cord. He waits. How come you did this? I ask finally. Sam, I really feel terrible and I don't know who to tell. I don't have anyone to tell who can understand what you were. You were my friend, but you're not my friend. I don't understand how this happened, David. I don't get it. Really, I literally don't. I mean, you didn't give me a chance. You never really told me what was wrong. Crying again. Where are you? His voice is low, impatient. In Paris, David. Where do you think I am? I'm home. God damn it, I hate you. Look, I'll come over after work. We'll talk. No! Fine. I'll be there about 7. I hang up, embarrassed for myself in front of myself. Ugh. What do I want back? What? The bored tolerance of a man who finds not one thing about me charming? The doorbell sounds, and I wipe my face, go to look out the peephole. It is King, the man who helped Lydia move in, holding the leashes of 3 dogs. No, 4. Between the legs of the German Shepherd is the ridiculous face of a Chihuahua, barking wildly at nothing. There are 2 Cocker Spaniels on braided leashes, sitting patiently as bookends, and looking up as though they are the ones that rang the bell. I open the door, and the dogs all rush forward. King pulls them back, smiles expectantly at me. Hi, want to go for a walk? Well, I'm kind of not dressed. I see the same accepting kindness in his pleasant face that I saw before. I've been crying, I say, laughing. Yes, I see that. Come for a walk with me. You won't cry anymore. Come on, go get your leash. I start to say that I can't, but why can't I? I ask him to wait a moment and go upstairs to dress. I select a blue sweater that is a flattering color for me. When I walk down the steps with King, he offers me his arm and I take it. Such a lovely thing. When did people stop doing it? Where are we going? I ask. It's a perfect November day, just cold enough for a coat, the sun bright. Anywhere. He stops, holds out the tangle of leashes to me. Dog? I smile, select the pink rhinestoned leash of the Chihuahua, whose hysteria has been silenced by the prospect of something interesting happening. Dad's coming for dinner tonight, I tell Travis. He is at the kitchen table, listlessly eating a snack of peanut butter toast. He looks up at me, searching for a way to react. Okay, I say. What for? What do you mean, what for? To eat. He shrugs, pushes his plate away. I'm done. What do you think we should have for dessert? He'll help me. Travis loves to help make dessert. I don't care. What, is he moving back here? Well, I put his plate in the sink, run water on it. No, he's not moving back. He's just coming for dinner. Travis nods, picks up his book bag, and starts out of the room. Where are you going? Homework. Travis? He turns, annoyed. I think you should, you know, remember that this was not my idea. I mean, Dad moving out and everything. None of it was my idea. I know. Well, you act. I don't know why you're so mad at me. But even as I say it, I realize I do know. He's mad at me for the same reason I'm mad at myself. Because although this was not my idea, it is my fault. I have to go do my homework. Fine. I open the refrigerator, pull out the steak. I'm making beef stroganoff, David's favorite. God, that's good, he said last time I made it. You can cook, honey. That you can do.
I slice the meat thinly, look out the window at the tree branches swaying in the wind. It's supposed to storm tonight, a power outage, and David stays to take care of us. How could he leave? I rinse off the mushrooms, recall King pointing out a leaf on one of the trees we passed. Maple, he said. Their leaves look too big for the tree, don't you think? Like kitten's paws. I'd asked him the names of the other trees we passed. He knew them all, tried to show me how to identify a tree by looking at the bark, the leaves, the structure of the branches. I learned Dutch elms, oaks, birches, of course, black locust, whose blossoms, he told me, smelled like grape lollipops. Cardinal, he said, about a sound we heard coming from the tops of one of the trees. Hear how it's like a whistle? I asked if he could see the bird, and he handed me the dog's leashes and used his big hands to make a frame. And then I saw him, too. I learned blue jay, creaky gate, and catbird. It does sound like a cat, I said, and King smiled. Ain't life a playground? What are you doing with all these dogs, anyway? I asked when we stopped in a park to rest. And he told me walking dogs was his job for the day. He took jobs by the day. Just so happened that his assigned area was near my neighborhood. Yesterday, he'd handed out samples of cheese at a supermarket. Smoked Gouda. Very good. I see, I said. I didn't really see. I think what he does is pretty nutty, but I like him. He's such a nice man. Plain, but really good, like bread and butter. And so easy to be with. Relief. I told him to come by tomorrow if he could. David ate less than half of what was on his plate. Clearing it, I ask, no good? No, he says. It's fine, it's great, I'm trying to cut down on that stuff a little. You know. Oh, sure. He had half a glass of wine to my three, too. I put the plates in the dishwasher. I should have made chicken. Fish, no. I should have made something brand new. Oh, God, of course I should have. Dessert, I ask. Aw, Sam, I have to pass, but God knows Travis will finish it. Travis had taken a huge piece of lemon meringue pie up to his room, then come down for another. Coffee? My voice is thin, taut. Want coffee, at least? If he refuses that, I'll tell him to leave. Sure, he says. But let me go and say goodnight to Travis, then we can talk. About what, I think. After Travis left the table, we went over money, what days were whose with our son. Then there was an awkward silence that lasted so long I had a strange impulse to burst out laughing. David was looking down and chewing at his lip, an old nervous habit, and it was no longer my job to remind him not to do it. He moved his spoon left, right, left. I wanted to snatch it from his hand and say, "Look at me," but I didn't know what I'd say after that. "Be right back," he says. I watch him walk toward the stairs. I have always loved how he looks from behind. The bit of hair over his collar, his broad shoulders, a good butt, even Rita always admitted that. I hear the stairs at the top of the landing creak in their familiar way, a father going upstairs to say goodnight to his son. What has happened here? How have I lost this? I pour two mugs of coffee, bring them into the family room, and set them on the coffee table. I sit at the end of the sofa, then move to the middle. I use my finger to quickly check the corners of my eyes for chunks of mascara, ruffle my hair to make it look fuller. When he comes back downstairs, David says, "He's asleep already." "Yeah, he's been doing that." He looks at his watch, 8:30? "He's been getting up earlier lately." David takes his mug of coffee, sits at the edge of his recliner. He looks like he has a body-wide itch he can't scratch. He doesn't really want to talk, not about anything. He was just being polite. He feels sorry for me. "Where's your roommate?" he asks. "Spending the night at her boyfriend's. Sometimes she does that." "Really?" "Yes." "Well," David clears his throat, sets his coffee down, no good. And then there is silence except for a slight humming sound from one of the lamps. "Quiet," I want to tell it. "Can't you let me think? Can't you see I'm trying to do something here?" "Sam," David finally says, and as soon as he does, I am up and moving toward him. Come back, please come back," is at the back of my throat. I kneel at his feet, put my arms around his waist, hold my breath to keep from sobbing. I am horrified. Somewhere over my head, a miniature version of myself looks down in disgust.
hands on hips, head shaking. But there is the feel of his hand on the back of my head, his voice saying my name again, but softer. I close my eyes, and now his fingers are on my neck, so warm. I push my face harder into him. He cradles my head, wordless and still, and I open my eyes and see his belt buckle, which I know, here he is. I close my eyes again, begin to kiss gently around the area of his zipper. The fabric smells warm, ironed, clean. I start to unzip his pants, hear him pull in his breath sharply. I stop, wait, nothing. I finish unzipping, reach inside his underwear, let me. I'm aware of my own wetness, the sweet specific ache of desire. Oh, let me, let me. He is flaccid. I rub, gently, nothing. I pull my hair back, take him into my mouth. Sam, he says, don't. But he does not push me away, and so I continue. In a minute he will respond, and then I will say, I heard you. I heard everything you said at dinner, but you don't mean it. You see? You can't mean it. We just need time. We just need to change a few things about the way we were together. You don't really want to leave. Look how you still care for me. But he is still limp. What am I doing wrong? My knees hurt. I want to change position, but I'm afraid to move. I take in more of him, change my rhythm, and now, still soft, David pulls away from me. I don't know where to look. Even in the worst of times, this has always worked. I sit back on my heels, looking down at the floor, hear him zip up. My humiliation is huge in me. It holds me to the floor. I'm sorry, he says. I nod. It probably isn't a good idea anyway, Sam. No. I should go. Right. Are you okay? Nothing. Sam? Yes, I'm... You should go. Is there anything else you needed to talk about? No. Here in my stomach, a blunt feeling of something landing, and then a slight nausea. He stands, reaching down a hand to me. Just go, I tell him. I hear the front door close, then his car door. I go to the window, watch him drive away. I should have tried to recall a scene from one of the adult movies we'd rented, something we tried a few times when our lovemaking had sputtered, then stalled. But when I think of those movies now, I can only remember how sorry I felt for the women, their terrible flat eyes, their bad teeth. The movies hadn't worked at the time, either. The last time we'd watched one, I, lying beside David in the obligatory flimsy black nightgown, aware of his erection, had nonetheless asked, oh God, what would their dads think? David had frowned, and I had stared at the screen thinking, well, what would they think? Some of the girls had bruises, subtle bluish marks that the makeup couldn't quite cover. The background music was so ridiculous, and the moaning so loud and urgent, it was completely unconvincing. I think there ought to be some element of surprise in the plot, I said, and there needs to be some vulnerability in the characters, in the men. What the hell do you think this is for, Sam? David asked, then sighed.